Now, for some reason, I have two videos. I have two of Ed. It was of Bill. I don't know why on Skype. Do you guys have that too?
Nope.
No, but it's your lucky day, Dave. Two of Ed. That'll be your pleasure.
Commence the operation shutdown. Episode 17. Turf Wars and Vacuum Reviews.
All right, welcome back to the Operation Shutdown. This is Bearcat, and I'm joined once again this week by friends of the show, Ed Grohl and Easy Pretzel. Ed, say hi.
Hello, everybody. Happy New Year.
Easy, let the grill ladies know you're here.
Hello. How's everybody doing out there?
Welcome back, guys. We're going to start this episode like we start every episode except for the last episode with... just crack that one open. What are you drinking? Ed, what are you having?
I am drinking a gifted beer by our generous host here, the Voodoo Brewery Pork Chop Sandwiches IPA, Western Pennsylvania Flair. Very light, fruity, very good. Loving it so far. It's great.
Great beer. Great beer name. Really like that one. Yep. Easy. What are you drinking?
I'm also drinking something very fruity. This is a flavored water with strawberries and fresh blueberries because I like to punish myself for my craft beer sins. So I am giving up all craft beer until the Super Bowl. This is now my fourth time doing this. It's good for your mind and your body and your soul, but it makes the craft beer scene a little bit boring.
Yeah.
A little something before yoga. Is that what we're doing here? Is that
That's nice. I'm drinking something local. I have a pounder can here of Kettle Face, which is a double dry hopped Imperial Red Ale. It's a collaboration between St. Boniface and Ephrata and Columbia Kettle Works, which is my local brewery. It is less than 10 minutes from my house. They make nice beers. This is their first canned beer for Columbia Kettle Works. This is their third year brewing this beer in collaboration with St. Boniface, which is a really nice brewery. This one clocks in at about, I think, 9%, and it's pretty true to style. It's brewed with all Simcoe. It's malty and sweet, a little bit bready up front, and the Simcoe kind of gets lost. I wish that had a little bit more for being a double dry hopped Imperial Ale, but it's pretty good. I like it. It's probably way too malty for Easy palate, but I enjoy this stuff.
And you did wait in the cold in line for that? Is that correct?
I did. I waited in the cold for this one. I stood outside for a whopping 20 minutes for them to open up. I was number 10 in line. They had 50 cases of this lined up, and they sold almost all of it yesterday. This is their first beer release. They had this in bottles, Bombers, last year, very limited. But they had a nice crowd outside on a very cold day. I was number 10 in line. By the time they opened, they had about 30, 40 people. A lot of people coming in and picking up a couple of four packs. It was $16 a four pack, which I thought was very reasonable.
And it is.
And they had a real nice crowd. I sat at the bar after I got a couple of four packs and drank their Logging Camp, which is a double IPA brewed with maple syrup, which was nice and sweet up front, and then really dry with, I think, Mosaic in the back. That was probably the nicest beer I had there yesterday. I wish they had that in cans, too, because that was very good. I talked with the owner and his wife and the head brewer, Rod, really nice guy. I've talked with him a bunch of times. They recently completed an expansion of their facility. They created more seating area, and then they also moved all of their fermenters down into the basement for temperature control in order to really try to improve their beers. Been brewing for 4 years now, and really every step of the way, just incremental improvements, getting a little bit better, a little bit better. It's a nice spot. It's in a town that needs it. Columbia is in rough shape, and this is a really bright spot for the township there. They got a lot of really great local support, and they're doing good work. So if you ever get a chance, definitely head down to Columbia Kettle Works. If they have it on, the best beer that they've brewed, in my opinion, has been their coffee stout, which is well done. Kettle Face will be on, it should be on tap for at least a week or two. So I asked you guys to come on, sent you a bunch of links. There were a couple of things that we need to get to. But before that, we have some follow-up this week. Last episode, we talked about a number of things, the beers that we enjoyed in 2016. But we also talked about two local breweries, Tattered Flag and Trogues. And we had lots of positive things to say about Tattered Flag's. Looking back on it, really enjoyed their double IPA. But we had that one beer, Dr. Jinx, and the chai tea stout, that milk stout that we just didn't really have a lot of love for, and we thought had some real problems. And after listening to the episode, Tony, the brewer down at Tattered Flags, reached out to me via Facebook, and I updated the webpage to reference what he stated about the beer. And he invited us to come back and have a beer tasting and talk with him, and to even possibly, you know, get a recording for the show. And I took him up on that. We're going to hopefully do that in the near future. But I do want to say I was really appreciative of the fact that they listened, and the fact that they were, you know, happy to respond and have a little bit of a discussion back and forth about the beer, and that they really did care about the quality of the beer and what people were having to say about it, and that they were checking it regularly and reaching out to other local brewers in order to run it past them and to try to determine maybe where the issues are and to ensure that the product's right. The other that reached out was Trogues. They reached out to me. They had listened to the show and said that they wanted to talk about the three things that, frankly, I was bitching about. They were the parking, the Impending Descent not being regularly bottled any this year, and where is Flying Mouflon? Hopefully I'm going to sit down with them soon and get some of those answers. And when I do, you guys will be the first to know. Thank you to both of them for reaching out to us, and I hope to have further updates about those later. There was one other question I'd received recently, one last piece of follow-up before we get into the rest of today's stories, which is someone asked us why we're not on Stitcher. And to put it most distinctly, I just really didn't like the Stitcher terms of use. I didn't feel like turning over my podcast to them and allowing them to put commercials over it or anything else. And really, I saw it as an intellectual property issue, and I didn't like their terms of use, so I just don't bother with them. Hope that answers your question. All right, on to the show. Sent you guys some links. The first one was, and we'll have this in the show notes, was a story out of MarketWatch.com about the coming turf war amongst craft beers. And this is something we talked about time and time again on this show. You know, is there a bubble? When's it going to burst? What's the issue? And what's coming in 2017? Ed, you read the story, right? Easy, you read the story. Easy, you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have been on this since the beginning that we have been doing this podcast. Is the bubble, if it's not coming, it's probably already here. But the battle, and it's going to be, I think it's interesting, this article talks about the macros versus the kind of craft macros, the Sam Adams versus the Budweiser. And then there's talk about the 5,000 breweries, and it's going to go all the way down to the local level. We're going to have local breweries fighting out for tap handles, shelf space, consumers coming into their tap room. It's going to be a big thing in 2017, and everybody who's kumbaya that we've been talking about is, I think it's time where it's going to be all out war all across the industry.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Although I think that in the coming year or years, there's going to be a lot of, with Miller and AB InBev buying up all these big brands and saturating the shelves. I mean, when you go down in a soda aisle, I mean, how many sodas can you name? And they're all there, and they're going to take up as much space as they can. And I think that some of these breweries need to kind of pull back and not think about should I be on the shelves next to these guys and I have a pale ale next to their pale ale or an IPA next to their IPA? Why don't I concentrate on what's going on at home maybe and get people into the brewery and get a unique experience? And that's kind of where I think things might have to kind of contract into. I think it's getting to be a little too big, and there's going to be two big brands, Coke and Pepsi type of thing. I could be wrong about that, but that's kind of where I see things going.
And I think to your point is so Bill's beer that he's drinking, he stood in line for, paid $16 for four beers, which we think is reasonable. If that was on a shelf next to, you know, a New Belgium or a Sam Adams, people would think that's ridiculous. And they're going to get passed up by the average consumer. So trying to fight in a shelf space versus these big brands, the Constellation brands or Sam Adams or whoever it's going to be, I think that's a wrong move. So these local breweries that are going to be controlling their own distribution at their on-site level, I think they're the ones that can be successful.
And you also have to look at things like even earlier today, we're sitting at my buddy's house. We're watching the Steelers-Dolphins game, and it's on CBS. And every commercial is like, this is the number one comedy, and this is the number one show, and this is the number – and we're like – we did a survey. Who is anybody in this room watching this? And there's 10 people in the room, and everyone goes, no. And it's kind of like one of those things where the flyover states are going to start to dictate all this stuff either way. They're the ones that are going to be bringing in the money. And you can't just be like, hey, we're going to throw our Imperial Stout out here next to these guys' pale ale. It's all becoming very it's starting to become very vanilla and very kind of run-of-the-mill. And it's all going to start to run together, and I think it's damaging the overall craft, quote-unquote, product, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the shelf space is really – and tap handles is really going to be a – it's like a funnel, right? We're all moving towards this narrowing, this bottleneck that's going to exist because we have, like we've mentioned, 5,005 breweries in the country now. And those breweries, though, they're not just trying to find a way to put the product out. They need to get the raw materials. Galaxy Hops, Dave, what did we see them on Twitter for?
I think he said it was like $42 a pound.
$42 a pound. And you had to buy 500 pounds in that lot. That was the minimum. Hey, these were huge, huge numbers that we're talking about. The raw materials are getting outrageously expensive. Everyone's trying to put out a barrel-aged beer. There's only so many barrels. Those barrels take 4 to 8 years before they come onto the market. So you're trying to buy something that 8 years ago was put into the product line. They're just not in great abundance. Everyone's trying to get the best hops. Everyone's trying to get the best product and the best ingredients. And the cost is going through the roof. I mean, the price of Galaxy Hops is hitting $42 really for one reason. Northeast IPAs. Everyone wants to make one.
Yep, and there's all these different hops that are coming out, and people don't know how to use them yet because they haven't worked with them yet, and so they're going to be putting out these Northeast IPAs that are subpar because they just don't know how to make one. You know, they're just throwing it against the wall and trying to figure it out. So it's an interesting time with the prices and everything.
Yeah.
And it's going to price out the little guys because they're going to be like, hey, I can't afford to do this anymore. You know, here's my wheat beer and this and that and the other. I mean, why would you even try to bother to buy stuff at that bulk when you have only X amount of dollars to spend? And it's all going to go to the big guys with the big money. And it's getting weird out there.
And I think there was another article that you could post in the show notes talking about the breweries that are closing and they're facing all these issues. So they went through, I think there was 5 that closed and 4 that are for sale. And they all have basically what the issues we're talking about is having trouble getting the consumers into their room. And if they do, maybe the beers they want to drink are different crafts. So the one person has more beers from other breweries that are doing well than their own beers. So they're going to close. And another guy is InBev has a sign outside. It was a billboard right outside of his place. And he thinks that that's the reason. And there's all these different reasons why I think these, and they're all challenges, but people have to figure out how to get around them. It's business. Business is not supposed to be easy. It's not supposed to be like, let me get a $150,000 loan, open a business, and I'm successful and I'm a multimillionaire. Business is hard. And these are all challenges that, you know, we know that's out there. These guys should know that. They're business owners. They should have a business plan and have what's going to happen when I want to make a Galaxy Northeast IPA. Well, this is the cost and this is how much money I need to save. Maybe I shouldn't buy that piece of equipment for $25,000 that I'll probably use three times.
Yeah, I thought that the interesting part of that story, it's from newschoolbeer.com. We'll have it in the show notes. You really should read it. The interesting part, while those four that we're going to be closing was interesting, the two that were for sale kind of, I thought that was kind of strange. I hadn't really thought of that other than these quiet pickups by the large brands. You don't hear about breweries going on the block, people selling effectively a turnkey business, maybe trying to cash in, maybe their debt ratio is way out of control with expansion. These breweries, when they expand, it's almost always done on debt. You don't go from being a 15-barrel brew house to a 50-barrel brew house on cash. I mean, I'm not the business guy that easy is, but I'm pretty sure that that's the way these things work. And that's a lot of money. It's a lot of debt to service. And maybe they're not seeing the growth that they expected. Because when you expand like that, when you make those big jumps, that's on potential that you think exists. It's not based on any guarantee. And maybe some of these breweries are finding out that they don't have the potential that they thought they did. And that's causing some real angina with the ownership, the investors, because a lot of these breweries, they have angel investors, they have people that they have money to. Those investors aren't doing it out of the kindness of their heart. They're looking for a return. These are businesses. They want the money, and they want to see the money generate and the growth. And if the growth is slowing, they're going to pull out.
Well, there's an old saying, every bar's for sale. So, I mean, I thought it was interesting when we looked at that, the article, and one of the breweries that they mentioned was closing, and the bar manager was arguing with the author of the article, like, no, this bar is not for sale. And the guy actually posted an email from the owner like, hey, make an offer. Every bar is for sale no matter what, whether it, you know, and a brewery, I still consider that a bar. If you have a tasting room and everything, I would still say you're a bar. So, you know, everybody's got their price. I mean, it's out there. And I think now you refurbish something, you make it look good, you turn a little bit of a profit. And I think some people are trying to maybe at this point slap a craft beer label on it and go, let's flip this, and somebody else will come in and buy it, and it's somebody else's problem.
Yeah, and especially when you see places like Cigar City that are, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that they're selling, people are seeing the dollar signs. And, you know, if I'm an investor, if a friend asks me, hey, give me 10 grand because I'm going to start a brewery, you know, I need some cash. And then I see that number for Cigar City. I'm like, how can we get there? And let's cash out so I can retire. And I think everybody who's an investor has that mentality. And that's why you see in private investment groups and all these people coming in and putting all the money in there because they see that, hey, let's sell this to a bigger place. Or, you know, let's package this together and sell it to Constellation Brands or InBev. And we're going to make a ton of money.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of similarities between the tech and industry and brewing in some regards when you look at these businesses and the investments. People are dying to put money into a brewery. On two occasions, I sat at a bar at a local brewery where two different individuals were talking to the brewer and had mentioned, are you looking for investors? The brewer casually and nicely said, no, not at this time. Thank you. And I asked him, in both cases, does that happen a lot? And both of them said all the time that on a regular basis, they've got people coming to them and saying, hey, you're looking for some money. People are looking to invest in brewing because they see it as this massive amount of growth. That's going to continue for a period of time. At some point, it's going to stop. In regards to the market place story, it was funny, you know, a friend of the show had commented that it was a story that was I kind of got the impression he thought maybe it was a story in search of an answer that he thinks already exists too frequently within the journalistic culture, which is that the craft beer industry is headed for this cliff. We seem to all agree that it's going there, but there's so many people that that I read, that I look at, that say, nah, it ain't coming. And it's, I think, this blind insistence that it's not there that makes me all the more assured that it is.
The one argument that I had that always comes back in my face when I say this is, what about wine? There's vineyards every 20 yards. You go to the liquor store, there's 300 brands of wine, da 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 da. And I say, well, most of those are destination type of things, and they distribute. I'm not going to try and get into the ins and outs of the difference in business philosophies, because I don't know that much about it. But it's two different businesses. You can't just look at it like that. And, you know, everybody just says, hey, well, this is successful. The brewing will be successful, too. And I think at this point, you still have to look at it as niche product rather than, you know, mass appeal type of thing.
I also think that wine is a much, much more mature business practice. That market is far more mature than craft beer in America.
Valid argument there, too. I mean, it's already established. The craft beer thing, I mean, can we even peg that post-grunge, mid-90s maybe, since it started really taking off? And wine's been here for hundreds of years and has been the pursuit of the elites, where craft beer is kind of like, well, you're a beer drinker, what the hell ever, you know.
The best wineries are backed by old money.
As is most everything in this country. old money always wins over.
And you see a lot of these wines, either from Italy and from France and other countries, you don't see as much. I mean, there are, of course, there's the Belgians and that stuff. But most of this craft beer is all coming from America. So it's a completely different business model. They have money overseas. That wine's going to all these other countries. You don't see a craft beer here going to, you know, Germany. I mean, there's a couple that are out there. I think Brooklyn and a few others are trying to figure that market out. But they have money that's not just in America.
That is an interesting point, too. Like, we go bananas for, like, Westies. And, you know, we love Delirium. We love all this stuff here. I mean, how many people over in, you know, Antwerp are going, I could really, you know, oh, I wish we got. This is probably a bad example, so correct me if I'm wrong. Like, hey, I would really like a Victory Prima Pils right now. Like, I mean, are they going nuts for it over there? Probably not.
Now, when I was in Belgium, I went to a place called the Delirium Cafe, which is the greatest beer bar in the world. But they have multiple levels. The bottom one was like awesome bottles for beers. I'm not kidding you. The beer book was 3 or 4 inches thick, and they had a glass for every brewery. They had places in Africa, Jerusalem, all over. It was crazy. But the top floor had an American craft beer, had a bunch of stuff, and it was all old, disgusting. I was like, this is awful. So I had one beer up there. I was like, this is no good. And we went back downstairs. So
right. So they don't care. They're just like, yeah, whatever. Give the Americans something when they come over here. They get something familiar. Fuck them is basically it.
That was my experience from 2 years ago over in Belgium.
I feel like if I was up there on that fourth floor drinking American beer, I'd feel like I was going to Europe to eat at Five Guys. I couldn't do that.
You can only have so many. I mean, I came back from Cantillon. You can only have so many goozes and lambics and stuff. Sometimes you just need to change it up. So
I hear you. That stuff.
I would like to say I do have a Delirium Cafe, one of their books. My brother was stationed in Germany. It's one of my coffee table books up in my actual living room upstairs from here. It's one of my favorite things to just look through and check out everything they have there. It's un-freaking believable. Really great.
All right. The other interesting story was this one by Upgroove, which is a website I hadn't visited before, upgroove.com, which was asking the question, is the Pittsburgh craft brewery scene tapped out? And it references the astonishing growth since 2013 in the number of craft beer operations that have opened across Pennsylvania, which is about 100. But the real impressive growth has been in Pittsburgh, Western Pennsylvania, where I'm from. They've had just brewery after brewery opening up. The newest darling being Dancing Gnome out there, and then three more that are coming online in just the next few weeks even. Mindful Brewing in Castle Shannon, 11th Hour Brewing is set to open this spring, and another one coming on. Up north of the city, and you have to wonder, you know, it, with Pittsburgh coming a little bit late into this movement, but coming on so quickly, in a lot of ways very strong, and people are saying, well, how many more can that city take on? And look, it's a big city, but it's not a major American city. How many breweries can Pittsburgh sustain? There's only so many places you can get to. And so there seems to be this trickle effect of how many can we have, and some are closing, some are for sale, and is the market starting to get tapped out? I think that it's obvious that there are a number of breweries that are now well established that are hopefully, with their product and with their size, able to sustain any issues. I don't think anyone is fail-proof, but there's going to be a lot of bloodbath for a lot of smaller breweries. And one brewery out there in Pittsburgh, which I think is trying to head this off and is thinking about what they want to do in a very interesting way, is Brew Gentlemen. If you don't know Brew Gentlemen, we've talked about them in the past. They're down in Braddock, which is where Easy Pretzel grew up. But they're doing things a little bit differently. If you have a chance, you should definitely subscribe to their mailing list. They put out an email every 2 to 3 weeks, and they're always very short but very nicely done. And the recent one they did is a review back of 2016, which they called the Year of No. And they talked about the fact that they say no to more things than they say yes to, that they only do the things that they're truly, really passionate about, the things that were really important. And one of the things that they say no to is trying something that's too big or too difficult. To focus really on their core beers, to make them better, and then to try some new things here and there. And that only when they absolutely feel that they have to do something, that they have almost the undying need to do it, do they actually say yes. Just being simply excited about it wasn't enough. And I think that there are plenty of breweries out there that just are way too exuberant with growth, expansion, new things, new styles, and there's not enough of a focus on what they're best at.
I think one thing about the article, though, that it is in their favor, that it's actually a really good point, is the new Pennsylvania law has allowed a brewery not to have to purchase an alcohol license, which is really, really expensive. So Pennsylvania has a certain amount in the state and per county. So if I wanted to open a brewery in my county, I'd have to buy one for my county. It could be $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 is one that's locally that sold recently. You don't have to have that if you're a brew pub, because you could sell not only your own, but any wines or spirits brewed in Pennsylvania. So I think that is one of the reasons that you continue to see this growth. I think if that wasn't here in Pennsylvania, you wouldn't see Pittsburgh take off as much, because now I can open and I can compete with the bar next door to me. So I can have a cool bar and a brewery, and I don't have to spend that $250,000, which I have to make a payment on every month in order to make sure that I'm profitable. So I think that's an interesting thing. I think Pennsylvania might be a little different than some other states going forward. But for the Brew Gentleman thing, I think we've been talking about this. Sometimes breweries try to do too much too fast. Focus on what you do well and continue to build on that. And they're doing that, and they're making a great name for themselves. These other breweries that can take advantage of that, they can take that where they don't have that nut cost up front and get really good at what you do, and then worry about go ahead and expand and try to go further.
Yeah, I think and to that point, I mean, I hate to use the quote from the movie, but it's baby steps. I mean, just because you have $50,000 sitting in your bank account doesn't mean you need to go out and start buying shit to gadgets or whatever, the Untapped billboard and the TVs. You don't have to start doing that. Just make your product unique and put your stamp on it, and gradually grow and let it happen organically, rather than, hey, we're just throwing money at this and we have all this cool stuff. I mean, that's just a recipe for failure. And I think a lot of breweries, I think that stems a lot from people who maybe are and we joke, and I've made this joke 100 times in this podcast, and as people will attest, hey, I won a silver in a homebrew competition, and my dad can secure me a $250,000 loan. Hey, I'm opening a brewery, and you see this money there sitting in your bank account, and you go, oh my God, I should buy a bunch of TVs, or oh my God, I'm gonna buy this jukebox or whatever the hell else, whatever else you can put in a bar. And I think that what they need to do is just concentrate on the product and make sure that you're growing your fan base and you're growing your, you get a nice groundswell of support for a great product. And then everything else will fall into place. You don't need to just have like the loudest and biggest, brightest thing right off the bat. You just need to make something good. And eventually that'll work out for you.
And if you look actually local here for Harrisburg, is we have two brewers that I think are trying to do that. And one is Millworks, which is downtown Harrisburg. And another one's Evergreen, which is pretty close to Harrisburg. And it's funny, they both come from the same group where they actually worked at Trogues. They worked with Pizza Boy. They all know each other. And they're all taking that same mentality of growth and doing things right, as opposed to these people that are kind of new to the craft beer and just see the money signs. They're going out and putting out some great product, trying to expand, not getting too crazy, not having can releases 2 months in. They're really trying to get their beer down right, and then they're going to really start taking over. And some of these other breweries in Harrisburg area are going to be in trouble, because when I have my free time, you know, I have Trogues, Pizza Boy, Evergreen, and Millworks. These other ones, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go to, because I don't have enough time to get to 50 different breweries in the area.
And to your point, that just the other day, Millworks put out their Imperial Stout, and is it perfect? No. Is it good? Yes. And you're like, this is their first Imperial Stout. Like, what a jumping off point that is, and that you can tell that they're dedicating so much to the product that. You know, rather than, hey, we have all this crazy stuff, and it's really getting off on the good foot. And Evergreen's the same way. They came out gangbusters they took their time and opened up, you know, 6 months after they started brewing, and they had all these good beers, and now everything they're putting out is really good. Is everything a huge hit? No, but that's anything. So, and you're right. It's just unbelievable when you take the time to care about the product and do it right and be patient. There's a lot to be said for that business model. And I think those are the types of places that will survive this overwhelming craft, quote unquote, bubble that I think that we're talking about here, you know, overall.
Yeah. The beer I'm drinking right now, this can release was 3 years in the making. It was first brewed as offering number 18 out at St. Boniface, and you can only get it on tap, and it was in very limited quantities, and I had it that year. I thought it was great. It was very good. And then last year, they brewed a little bit more of it. They also bottled a few. You could get a couple bombers here and there. Those bombers were closed by hand, so there weren't that many of them. It was a nice beer. It was very good, and I was really excited this year to see it again. And now to have it in cans and 4-packs. And each St. Boniface and Columbia Kettle Works had 50 cases. And now it's at least at Columbia Kettle Works, I'm pretty sure it's all gone. That's perfect. It's a great way to slowly build the brand, to introduce something that is successful. You know, Columbia Kettle Works has really taken that baby steps approach. Each step of the way, just trying to do something a little bit more, a little bit bigger, and none of this grandiose jumping off point and moving outside of themselves. They've stayed very honest with both themselves as brewers and as a business, and I think with their customers. And that type of growth really, I think, makes for a long-term, endearing, quality business.
And if you go back to that article about the breweries closing, the one thing that those people have to be careful about is I think it's Fire Mountain Brew House. They didn't change with the times, and they talked about it, where they got lost because the new flavors started coming in, new styles, and they haven't kept up. So they have to be worried about that. And they also mentioned, which is I know I'm guilty of, is that there's a phenomenon where you don't want to drink the same thing twice because you have untapped, like, oh, man, I already had that. I'm going to try this beer because I never had it before. Even though I love Bell's Two Hearted, I pass over it all the time because I'm trying something new, when meanwhile it's probably crap. And I was like, you know, I should just enjoy the beer that I really like. So I think these all kind of tie together, where they got to learn the lessons, go slow, but also be able to adapt when you have to. You know, keep an eye on the market. When a Northeast IPA comes out, guess what? Everybody wants one. So, you know, put it on tap. You know, it's not a traditional style. It's not you know, these old school brewers might not like it, but guess what? Consumers like it. I love it. Everybody I know likes it. Non-beer, craft beer drinkers love it. I mean, it's not a bad thing that there's a new style. It's not as creative or I guess the, I don't know what the really word is. It just doesn't meet those standards where this is the IPA. They're outside the box.
I mean, I have a friend of mine who was opening a brewery past 6 months, and they are open. And one of the first things, you know, I started asking questions and da da da. And one of the first things they said to me was, "Oh, well, we want to get distributed, and we want to be in these bars, and we want to, you know, do all this stuff." And I'm like, "You haven't even opened yet, and you already want to distribute." I'm like, "Aren't you putting the cart before the horse here?" And
exaggerated wanking motion.
Yeah, I definitely saw that, and I was trying to ignore it so I didn't laugh in the middle of my sentence there. But I think that's the mentality that a lot of these places are trying to open and trying to make money off the bat, and that's not how Stone Brewing. The guy just loved to make beer, and it happened organically. You might not love his beers now, but the guy made $1 billion because he just loved the product, loved the craft, and embraced it, and it just took off from there. I think now people are like, "Hey, we're going to get rich doing this." And I think now it's not the way it is. It's not that easy anymore. And you got to be careful with getting way too far ahead of yourself. You got to make sure that people are coming to your place, spending money there, low overhead. Why would you want to bottle and throw everything out there? That's, you know, it's cost. But they think that getting their brand out there is going to make them money. And it's too much too soon. And we're going to see a lot of these places, you know, the fuse is going to die.
I think what's forgotten is that the beer is the brand. Dave, to you.
Yeah, I would say to Ed's point is that not Treehouse and Trillium didn't open up to make $1 billion, $1 million, whatever. They were kind of an organic thing, and people started hearing about how good their beer was, and that created the buzz where now they're crazy and people stand in line and pay $10 a can.
Because everyone tweeted each other about it. That's all you need.
That's exactly it. You got to do it organically. You can't force it, or you're like, "Oh, I'm just going to start throwing out can releases," and then you're like, "This beer sucks. What am I doing? What am I standing in line paying $20 for a 4-pack for?" You know, it's. I think it's simple, but people, they're just greedy, and they see the money, and they have the blinders on. They have that rhino mentality where that's all they see is the money, and they're not realizing that it's not that easy.
And I don't want to paint, you know, everybody who's doing this as greedy. I definitely see where, you know, there's a lot of people probably doing it for the right reasons, but I also think in the back of their minds are like, "And I'm going to make a couple bucks off this." Whereas I think in the mid-90s, the places that opened, like a Trogues, they were just like, "Well, let's do this and see what happens." And did they think they were going to have this huge success? Probably not. And that's pretty much where your most success comes from, is when you don't really expect it. It's when you, I think a lot of these places are putting the success in front of the product, and they're looking too forward to that, and they're definitely getting ahead of themselves. And I think it's creating a market where there's 175 million of the same beers, and then you get like a 1% up here. I hate to use that term, but it's getting to be kind of weird in that aspect, where there's a lot of the same thing out there because everyone's just like, "Hey, we're going to throw it out. And I think it's too much too soon, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
A quick couple little tangents here. You mentioned Stone Brewing and like whether or not people still like it. I had the Double Bastard Bigger Longer Uncut, which was a tired name for a beer in my mind. That's an old joke. That joke's old enough to vote. It wasn't very funny, in my opinion. I get it, but come on. And the beer was just so unimpressive. They have done so many variants of Arrogant Bastard. They've bastardized the brand. And now a beer that I really loved 8 years ago, 10 years ago, is utterly pointless.
And Greg Stone, I mean, the guy, he goes on these like walkabouts for 8 months or whatever. The guy's a crazy hippie or whatever. And I think that he's had the shits of the business. I think he doesn't want any part of being Stone Brewing. Personally, I'm sure he loves the profits and I'm sure he donates or whatever. But yeah, it's one of those things where he had Arrogant Bastard, we'll put a gargoyle on it, and we sold a hell of a lot of fucking t-shirts, and all of a sudden this guy's loaded. And I think it's even he doesn't like it anymore. Like, that's how big it's gotten. And I can see Dave's chomping at the bit here to say something. So.
No, I love Stone, and I still love some of their beers, but they all have gotten so big. I mean, they have an airport bar. I mean, that's trying to control your quality at an airport bar is unbelievably difficult. So, yeah, Cigar City has one too. But those are the things when you get that big, it's like, man, you got to the money is just rolling in so much, or he's probably just like, whatever, just put it out there. People are going to buy it. I'm not worried about what all the people on a beer podcast like we used to think. We're just going to continue to make our money and not worry about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. One other tangent I want to kind of go to. Ed, you had mentioned the Untappd screen up in these breweries, and there's one locally. I don't know about you guys if you've seen it or not, but I think it's kind of creepy. I was sitting there drinking a beer, I'm checking it on Tapped, and then I look up and there's my face on the wall. I didn't expect it. It kind of weirded me out, and I'm like, I didn't know how I felt about that. It just seems kind of weird.
Yeah, and that's a buy-in thing. They come out and do a sales pitch for you, and they're like, hey, and we're going to get you all this publicity, and it's going to be cool, and it's going to be fun, kind of like it's like the craft beer equivalent of, I would say, NTN trivia. Does anybody remember that when you'd come in and your face would poke? Yeah, and you're like, hey, I knew that was Purple Rain. Yeah, that was great.
My username used to be P_NES. I used to work at a Damon's, and my job was to change the TVs and to hand out trivia boxes. So I just, as a 16 and 17 year old kid, I decided just to sit there and try to find out funny names that I could get past the censors on there. So that was my name.
I do remember you being at Penn State. I remember there was a place in State College that was always at the top of the goddamn leaderboard, and we always tried to catch them, and we never could. But yeah, it's that kind of thing, though. It's not the same thing, but it is an interactive, and you'll see your face up there and you're checking in and this person's checking in at your bar. So, I mean, I don't know. Is it that gimmicky?
Does this place, they have your rating of that beer up there? So if you like 3 stars, you're going to get yelled at by the brewer?
No.
I would like that if you could get shamed. You're like, I give this 2 stars, and somebody just comes over and goes, what the fuck is your problem?
this will, I think, dovetail into something I'm thinking about and I'm pretty sure I'm going to do. And I'm going to kind of just go extemporaneously here, more so than I already do on this podcast. But I've been giving serious consideration to just stopping the whole number of caps rating thing on Untappd. I'm pretty sure I'm going to do it. I don't know why I can continue to do it. I've thought about stop doing it for a long time. And the arbitrary nature of, 4.25 versus 4.5. I don't even understand why I do it. I feel compelled to. It's part of this gamification of drinking, the badges. God, the badges. For me, Untappd really is a journal. Have I drank it? Did I like it? And I feel like the ratings should be, for me, personal. I would feel much more comfortable with the app if I could have the public setting of I checked into this beer, I'm here, but without the fact that how I rate it to exist outwardly. I wish I could have it be personal in that sense. And also to have some notes on it that would be personal. That this beer is fucked up. I'm not drinking it again. This beer is great. I'm going to definitely make sure I seek it out. And then I get questions all the time from people. Have you had this? Oh, actually, yeah, I have. Did you like it? Yes, I did. And in many cases, just being able to see when I had it is enough of a recollection to bring forth, oh, yeah, what did I like about it? So in so many ways, it's a journal. I like the social aspect of it. I'm not sure I'm totally comfortable with the rating system, the arbitrary nature of it, and the way it works. I don't know. How do you guys feel about it?
And it depends on your day. I mean, your palate's different every day. It depends on what you had for dinner, how many beers you've had. You know, if you're doing a tasting, you know, that 18th beer in a tasting at a beer event is not, you know, that's not really what that beer probably tastes like. So those kind of things, I try not to rate them. The biggest pressure I feel about rating is when somebody gives me a beer. So I have a friend who gives me beer. I gave it actually his a Tired Hands milkshake beer. I think I gave it a 4 or 5. And he was so upset that I didn't give it a 5 that he told me I wasn't getting any more Tired Hands if I ever rated a Tired Hands a 4 or 5 again. So I felt pressure to now that I have to make sure that if he gives me a beer, that I have to make sure that it's really high quality. Even if it's not, I just put it on there so I can continue to get more beer and I don't have to hear shit about it. But some days it's like, hey, listen, that was a 4 or 5, which is still a great rating, but he got mad it wasn't a 5.
My whole thing would be I know people close to me who are – they would rate something like a 3 and then get a text or an email like, oh my God, what's wrong with this beer? Why didn't you like it? Da, 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 da. And just that hassle is a pain in the ass. I mean, anyone who follows me on Untappd knows that I am quite generous on beers regardless. I love everything. Even Miller Lite's like, I think a 3.5 in my stupid Untappd. You basically would have to puke in my beer for me to hate it. You know, it causes a lot of problems, but I do also see, knowing a brewer locally here, he will go on and he checks his numbers when he puts a beer out there. And if people are saying, hey, this is a 2 and it's something other than, well, I don't like IPAs, which why are you rating it in the first place? But it say, hey, this tastes like X, Y, and Z to me. And you can get some creative feedback. And I think it can be a useful tool for that. But the problem is when you mix honest opinion with the internet, everything kind of goes to shit. I mean, the internet just tries to shit on everything, and your beers are no exception. And eventually those lines are going to cross and you go from creative to just, you know, we're just going to poop on this because I had a bad waitress or something like that.
And I feel pressure sometimes to also rate hires, because if I rate something like a 3.25 for, and a local brewer looks at my Untappd and sees Bud Light at a 4, I don't want to get shamed on Twitter that I gave Bud Light a 4 when I give his beer a 3.5. I judge it because of the style. I say, listen, I think Bud Light it's consistent. It's great for what it is. It's a shit beer. I can drink a lot of them. It's great. That's 4 to me versus another shit beer. If it's not good, I might give that a 3. So I have my own rating style, but I feel pressure that if I don't rate it at least a 3.5, if I give it a 2.75, I know I'm going to either hear about it on Untappd or on Twitter, and I don't want to have to deal with the brewer yelling at me why his beer is so much better than, and I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, that's the big issue I have with the rating system, and that's why I'm like 4-star king. Everything gets 4 caps.
Yeah, I hear that. And there's a brewer, and I won't name him because I don't think he needs to be outed, out of Pittsburgh, who has a great Twitter feed. It's fantastic. It's so good. But at one point he was talking about, you know, he was having a good day, and then he goes on and he's reading about a guy's flight, and he named everything a 2 and said it all sucked, and he's like, I'm ready to go out and slip my wrist. And I'm like, why do you even, and I wrote to him, I said, why do you even read this stuff? I feel like this is like going into the comments section in YouTube, or going on to, in some cases, or going on to Xbox Live and trying to talk to people on Call of Duty about your problems. You're going to get yelled at with like all the vitriol that the internet has. I think it's interesting that brewers feel that they can garner anything from the hoi polloi that are on Untappd. Yes, there are some things that can be gleaned, but I think that they're probably few and far between, and they need to be very selective about who they read.
Oh, I was going to say, it's like reading Amazon reviews. You can find the people who are like, well, this package came and it got wet because the guy left it outside and it rained. And they're like, I'm like, well, how was the vacuum? You know, and they're just like 1-star. Like, people are just dipshits about reviewing stuff too. So you have to be able to filter those numbskulls out before you get to the real meat and people who are like, hey, you know, this tasted off and I think he has some diacetyl or whatever the hell else problem. It was overcarbed. I don't know. So you gotta be able to weed through that, and you have to have tough skin. You're out there. You know, you're gonna have to take some bullets, man. You're gonna have to definitely take it.
and I think if you look at the numbers are actually pretty good. If you say, all right, this averaged 3.9 out of a 5, my normal IPA is a 3.7, you could take some information from that. And, you know, not look at a detail at every comment, you're going to get a lot of shit. But you pull back and say, okay, well, this is a really high-rated IPA that I'm making. I'm on to something. And I don't know if that's the reason that Pizza Boy did that for their second milkshake, but one of the highest IPAs they had was the peach and the pineapple. I was looking at it. I know that because I just want to see how what people said about it. And it was a pretty high-rated IPA for him. So I said, you know what? Maybe that's why he says people love it. I'm going to make some more of it because I'm going to change. And so I think that sometimes does matter.
Yeah. And what a 180 yeah. with, oh, man. And he saw the light. And he's like, hey, we did it. We did it well. Let's do it again. Hell.
I'm going to disagree with you just a little bit, Ed. I understand what you're trying to say with him, you know, seeing the light. But one of the things that I really took away from his short interview with me was when he said, but hey, I can't dictate everything. Terry and Al did not want to make that beer. They don't like the style. They don't like the brewing process. They weren't comfortable with it. They were outside of their comfort zone for something that they don't enjoy. But he said, I can't dictate everything. You're right. He saw the light. I think he's aware of the light in general. He understands that the point is to, you know, sell beer to get it out and to make things that people like.
Al's a bad example, though, because he's also not a blossoming business. He's at full bore, and he has the ability to say, I think this is shit, and I don't want to make it, but these people like it, so I'll do a couple kegs of it. He has that authority to do that because he's already got – his business is established. Mm-hmm. He's not just Joe Startup coming in and going – well, I don't want to do that because the art or whatever dumb reason you have for it. Al's got the money to be like, well, we're going to make this. And if it blows, it blows. Fuck it. We throw it out in the trash can or whatever if we have to get rid of kegs. He can also experiment. He has that luxury. When you're starting, you don't have that luxury. You have to definitely innovate and make something that, you know, you have to try to get off on a big foot there and distinguish yourself from other things. Don't do it with every beer, but, you know, with 1 out of 4, go balls to the wall. Do whatever you want to do. It's fun.
Let me ask you this question, guys. Making a little bit of a turn here. Do you think that having a Northeast style IPA or a milkshake IPA, which I think is a little bit of a different variant of that. It's kind of like a branch that comes off of that same general theory of a beer. Do you think that is something that is table stakes for an established brewer right now?
Do you mean it's something that you can now throw out because you're established and just say, hey,
no,
it's out of our comfort zone, or no?
No, that if you're an established brewer, if you don't do it, that you are in some ways going to be viewed differently or as being behind. Is this a style that people have to start doing?
No, I don't think you have to, especially if you have a portfolio and your reputation is such that nobody's going to care if you make that or you don't. And there are some breweries locally that do that. But I do think, conversely, if you come out of your shell and just throw one out there that is not indicative to your style and hit it out of the park, it can put you on the map. And can definitely get people talking and get people to your place.
I think an IPA is table stakes for any brewery that opens. You have to have an IPA on, right? We all agree with that.
And a good one, not just like a thrown right together 3 weeks type one. Yeah,
I think that to your question is, do you have to make one? I think if you are specializing in some IPAs or you don't have a special style. So there's a new place that I think Ed went to today called Boneshire. That guy is making some awesome bourbon barrel aged stouts, just unbelievably delicious. They're new. They're just opening up. Now, does he have to make one? No, but some other one, and then maybe another brewery that is not putting out great beer, but they have some IPAs and they don't have a signature. I think that they have to to do something to get somebody in there. I'm not going to a brewery that has average beer unless they're putting out maybe, hey, try our new Northeast IPA, our new milkshake. I'll come out and give it a shot and see which, you know, see what it tastes like. But it depends. I think it depends on if you were good at what you do in a different area, don't have to go to that direction. But if not, you do.
Yeah. And to put more clarity on your point, Boneshire, their Lazarus and the variants are all very, very good.
They're amazing. And just to clarify, we were at our buddy's house for the Steelers-Dolphins game, and somebody brought that as a growler. I love his Russian, his Imperial Stouts are great. The IPA, it's like a hop test one. That one wasn't mind blowing. It was good, but you can definitely see where they're heading with it, which is definitely a good way to go.
Yeah, and Alan Miller, who's the brewer there, he has his bona fides from his time with Milbach, which is a great little brewery.
Was that a pun?
Unintentionally, yes.
I love the Riz. I hope there's more and more of that out there. There's not enough Riz and it's out available in the public, I think.
I worked with brewery at Hershey right across from them at PA Flavor, I think 2 years ago when he was first on his own. And I just kept walking over and getting the Lazarus. And by the end of Flavor, I was hammered. And I just kept going over just being like, just give me more of that. It's very good stuff. He's on the right track.
I agree. All right. Anything else for the go to the order?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Let's kick it to the after show. This wasn't a complete shit show, so I think we'll do it again. This is actually probably our most together episode from the sounds of it.
Man, I'm scared to death to embarrass you now. I don't want any more angry emails from breweries. That's
they weren't angry. No one was angry.
In all honesty, just looking back and reading, they were quite cordial and very nice. And I do think that does create a discussion for open criticism. Maybe not, hey, these guys blow or whatever. I think it was very well done, and I look forward to more interaction like that. I think it definitely is a healthy thing.
I think it actually made me think, too. It said, you know what, I really need to take this serious because this is someone's business, and I don't want to be shitting on them for no reason. I usually have a reason why, and I just need to make sure that it's a fair reason. And I think our criticism was fair of both of those places. We gave them the good and the bad, especially Trogues. They know the parking's terrible.
Yeah, they have no qualms about that. I do feel a little bit bad ragging on Tattered Flag. They're newer, but five of us, recognize that. And I'm not going to harp on it, and I'm not going to go back to it. But I do like that we have an open discussion now, and it's great that they want to have us back, and I really appreciate that. And that's what's great about the beer community is the open ideas and criticism. It's very cool.
Yep. All right. Let's kick it to the after show.
Commence the operation shutdown after show.
So what's up, gentlemen?
What's up?
We're just flirting.
Oh, that's nice. I got another beer. Voodoo Ranger.
By the way, Will, Billy, this pork chop sandwich is very good.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, this was a good podcast beer, too. It wasn't like too... It wasn't the Bourbon Barrel Madness that I had last night.
No. Voodoo Ranger. This is brand new. And
all right,
$3.99 for a bomber.
What?
Yeah, a 9% Imperial IPA, $3.99. It was at a Giant. I saw it. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna buy that.
Holy shit! $4.
And it's for $4. It's great.
Did you get outrageously good?
Yeah, I got my $4 worth. It's
holy shit.
It could use a lot more hops for an Imperial IPA, but it's a little thin on the body. It's a new Belgium beer. It's not bad. It's not great. And it's $4. So I love it. The economics just work, So
I agree.
So that $230 is paid for the Bourbon County proprietors is probably too much.
God. You're a fucking bad man.
$250 for a
bottle. $230.
Whatever.
Seriously, I consider that four tires. Like that.
Hey, that's Pappy Van Winkle. I gotta parlay those funds into something else.
Yeah. Now.
Actually, I got two other bottles of this Thomas Handy and made $200 each on that. So, total in, I made $1,500 on three bottles of bourbon.
Wow.
Wow. I'm going to just start coming to your... When I come to your house, I'm just going to start punching ceiling tiles and see if fucking bourbon falls out.
Or cash.
You know, beer, yeah. Hopefully money. It'll be like The Price is Right.
So, yeah, Ed, you were talking during the show about the fact that you were looking at Amazon reviews for vacuums. You've been in the vacuum market for at least 2 months. You haven't bought a vacuum yet, have you?
We have reached an apex in the podcast. This morning at Target for $99, I bought the Bissell Clearview Pet Vacuum.
Oh no!
And
does it suck? And it. Oh, does it? And I'll tell you what. I ran it today, and it looks like I just moved in. I'm like, holy shit! It's unbelievable. And like, I ran it for 5 minutes and the canister is full. That's how bad the cat and tyranny are at shedding. Like this whole thing, it's already struggling. It's great. It's got like the retractable cord on a fucking, I love it. It's great. So yes, topical. I bought that this morning.
Nice.
And then I went to the speakeasy and had some Garage Racer IPA by Rubber Soul. Loved it.
Nice. Nice. Speaking of cleaning, easy. You're cleaning. You're doing a clean living. What's up with that?
30 days. Or it's actually 35 days.
35 days. So,
good time to replenish your liver. And I do it like every 2 years because it's good. Because then you realize that I probably shouldn't, like, every single beer event, I can actually miss it and it's okay. Because yeah. Then it starts to be like, all right, I'll have here. Oh, there's Saturday afternoon. Oh, my kids are taking a nap. I got to go run to Al's real quick. I'm like, no, I don't have to have every beer that's out there.
Yeah.
There's 5,000 breweries. 100 beers each, so, you know, whatever, there's 500,000 beers out there. I'm not going to have them all, so I need to stop, like, trying to have every beer that's out there.
4 years ago, I intended to take 6 months off, mostly just to show to myself that I could do it. And after a absolutely ridiculous night at Dogfish Head, the brew pub, drinking a obnoxious amount of beers, I just went totally cold turkey for 6 months, and it ended up being 8 months. And you know what? It will clear your head out. It's not a bad idea to give it up for every once in a while.
It'll clear your calendar out too, because oh my god, there's nothing worse. I had to do it health reasons last year, 2015, not 2016, and I had something was moving its way through my intestines and I had to have but 2 weeks in the hole and going out. I was like, I can still go out and be fun and be funny. And within 20 minutes of being at one bar with all my friends, I go, I'm going to murder these people and I need to get the fuck out of here. I was miserable being sober around drunk people. I'm like, do we all act like this? Like it's a real like weird thing. And then I go, I really need to start drinking again so I can be a part of this again.
Yeah. And your friends are really drunk friends.
Yeah. A bunch of dual income, no kids. I have befriended, I would say, a baker's dozen of enablers. That's basically where I'm at.
Yeah. Those are dinks. Dual income, no kids are.
It doesn't help that you're right downtown and you're, you know, have an awesome bar right next to your house.
I legit can throw a football through the Midtown Tavern's front door. Like, I could play catch with them over at Second Street. It's great. Well, it's great and it's bad at the same time because, like, even if I was trying to do the Dave 30 here, I'd be, like, staring at it, just going, they probably miss me, right? I can just go over for, like, wings, right?
I would like to see you try to throw a football, though. That is a challenge I would like to see happen.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That should be one of our podcasts. It should be. We should videotape the feats of strength and physical challenges. We should recreate the NFL skills challenge with the three of us. That would be amazing. You on your bum leg.
Drunk throwing a football through a window.
And then midget me trying to throw through the Midtown Tavern's front door.
we should give you the Wonderlic after you've had a couple of those bourbon barrel aged stouts. See how you do at that. See if you can beat Vince Young's 8 or 9.
By the way, that is one of the easiest tests I've ever taken.
Oh, yeah.
It is. One of the questions was, there's a bag of nuts cost 21 cents. If you purchase 4 bags of nuts, how much would you spend? And the fact that Frank Gore and Vince Young got like 6s and 8s, which is unbelievable to me. It's just that low.
Did they just answer with the class. D's?
Yeah, D's.
The answer is A, B, C, or D's nuts.
I mean, if you don't get like a 15, like I know tests something, it's a time test, so it's real. It is high pressure. I didn't even get through all the questions. But I understand why you don't maybe not get a 30, 40, but not to get a 15 is embarrassing. It's embarrassing to your university that they basically have shown that you probably can't even read.
No. Speaking of stupid stuff, Ed, you sent a link about a shower beer.
Speaking of stupid stuff, Ed.
Ed, you sent a link for a shower beer that was developed by some Norwegian country, Nordic country. I can't remember. And they designed a shower beer. It was a small 8 or 9 ounce beer. It was meant to be light and refreshing to be drank in the shower. And it had one very ridiculous, and it was by a design firm, right? Or design school. And what was what did they forget?
Well, I would say paramount. A number one, why would you take a bottle of fucking beer in the shower?
A bottle.
That is just glass. What? You're just asking to die in a pool of your own blood in the shower with no evidence because it'll just rinse down the drain. And you're going to die a cold death while you bleed out in the shower. Who makes a bottle to take in the shower?
Hey, speaking of drinking, dude, how much water are you drinking a day? Because I'm watching you pound this water.
It's tremendous. And this is a 32 ounce container.
And you finished it during this podcast.
I just had the second one's already done.
That's the second one?
Yes.
Oh, my God. You're drinking more than a gallon a day?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Are you using a catheter? How the hell are you?
It's good clean living.
Yeah.
God, stadium, buddy.
You must be pissing constantly.
It's good. Well, when you go on, you know, with knee surgery, my meniscus is still not repaired yet. It's healing. I can't even run for 2 more months, so it's going to be total of 4 or 5 months before I'm allowed to even jog total. So I need to do something to keep off that beer weight too.
I hate when that happens.
Eh. All right. Anything else to talk about? You want to talk about football games today and yesterday? The blowouts?
The football, and then I saw you had a little Twitter conversation about the ratings. The ratings are fine. They're going to be fine. They're going to be, you know, they're going to continue to make money. They're going to expand to England. They're going to have a team in Mexico. They're going to do all that stuff. They'll be fine making money.
Do you, Dave, think that they might reel back the Thursday night games?
I do, because they're just the guys' bodies can't take it. Yeah, it's not good quality football.
You can't keep preaching this. Hey, we're player safety, and go. Oh, by the way, you play 4 days from now. Like it's just, and the games are shit. Nobody gives a crap. I mean, unless your team's playing. I mean, when's the last time you're like, I have to watch this? Unless you have a grand on the game, nobody gives a shit about
that. Yeah, you have your fantasy quarterback is playing. Your favorite team's playing. Other than that,
and that's still a maybe. Like, I don't give a crap. I just make sure that they're in on Thursday, and I'm like, whatever happens, and the guy got 8 points or whatever.
Yeah, I might watch a quarterback just because that's your guy is going to be throwing touchdown. Other than that, I'm not watching it. It's not fun to watch. It's another. I don't have enough time to watch football 5, 6, 7 days a week. It's like I love Sunday at 1 o'clock. I wish every game was at Sunday at 1, so I could go to a bar, watch 4 hours of football, and get back home. I can't be away from my family or my work or whatever, you know, even my interests. I can't be away from, you know, I want to read Twitter. I want to read a magazine or a book. I can't do that because football's on all the time. So
I'm with you 100%. 100%.
I cut out Monday Night Football is out of my life. I don't even watch, unless the Patriots are on, I don't watch it. It's
you're just burned out. Yeah. And I'm with you with on the 1 o'clock thing. The Falcons had, I believe, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, 9 games that were 4 o'clock this year. They are in the Eastern time zone. And I think 4 of those were at home. And I'm like, why? Because they play the freaking Chargers? Who gives a rat's ass? Just put them on at 1 o'clock every Sunday. If you're on the West Coast, okay, Raiders, you can play at 4 o'clock. No, you know, that's fine. And the West Coast loves it. They get to have brunch and football. It's great. Their day's over by 7 o'clock. It's awesome.
And a London game for us at 6 in the morning. It's 9 in the morning here. It's 6 in the West Coast. I think they're going to change that. If they kept the Thursday, and this has been my idea for a long time, and they should do it anyways if they don't, is have 2 bye weeks. You actually get 18 weeks of football without adding a game. So they want that 18th game because they want the TV money. Well, guess what? Just add an extra bye week, and so less teams will play each week, and then you can still have your Thursday. So if you play Thursday, you get a bye before you play Thursday. So the guys get at least the rest, and their brains get gel from basically being in a car wreck for 60 minutes. And then, oh, by the way, you have to recover the next day and then learn a new whole new scheme to play a new team 3 days later. These guys aren't the brightest guys in the world, and they're putting their bodies on the line. Like, give them a bye week before the Thursday.
So now but that does extend the season a week. So are you going another week into January, or are you coming back into August and taking maybe take away
a preseason game? Yep.
So it starts. Oh,
they're not
getting
away a preseason game.
Oh, hell no. Come
on. That's free money. Free
money. One away, one at home, and then some teams like Steelers or Eagles could play at a college stadium. They could do like play at different places. There's something that can make it interesting. Like
that actually would be cool. Like a Brown Steelers game in Columbus. That would be brilliant. Really cool.
They're not going to do it because it doesn't generate enough money.
But they don't make that much money. It's only a couple million for these games and these preseason games. It's guaranteed sales. That's the thing. The tickets are guaranteed sales. But if you actually had good sales at Columbus and you start to expand your brand. So if I'm Cleveland, I'm pushing out against Cincinnati, and Columbus is kind of in between. I want my brand to go out there, so I want to play those games.
There's only so many stadiums that can accommodate 60, 70,000 people. I mean, go to Columbus.
There's a lot more than you think. In the West Coast alone, there's like 30 stadiums that have 60 or 70,000 or more. It's crazy.
Okay. You're probably right.
Minnesota and Green Bay at Michigan. Like, how cool would that be?
It would be cool to see that in the Big House. Damn, I'd like to see that. I'd actually watch that. That might be the one thing that gets me to watch a preseason game.
110,000 people just show up. And students! The students are just getting there. It'd be awesome.
Ooh, I'd love a student section for a professional game.
How drunk are you getting as a sophomore at Michigan to go see the Packers? And oh my God, it's awesome.
And just wait, as they start to expand beer sales to these stadiums, I mean, it's common. I mean, I don't like it. I'd rather in my section of Penn State, I have season tickets, not have it, but it's going to happen because of the revenue. As that happens, they're going to have more destination type of things. They have to, because now Penn State's changing their plumbing because they don't have the plumbing to have things open in the wintertime, and they don't have the beers. Once they get all that, they're going to get concerts and all that kind of stuff. Every college is going to be basically like a new venue for events.
They're going to liquor, right? I heard somebody mention in the guy who sits next to me, he's a big Villanova guy. He went to Villanova. He said they're opening up liquor sales at once they redo their arena or stadium or whatever, wherever the hell they play, they're going to have liquor sales there.
Yeah, that new law with Pennsylvania has added liquor at the sporting events. So they're going to be able to have liquor at those kind of games, which I don't know if it's a good thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll never go to an Eagles game ever.
Yeah, because that's what the Lincoln needs is – liquor. Can you imagine like Veterans Stadium with hard booze?
I do like the fact that they had a court and jail before they had liquor sales. That's amazing.
God. Hey, changing the subject a little bit, Dave, what are they gonna do with Beaver Stadium? Are they gonna there's been talk of modernizing it, raising it? What are they gonna do?
That's what they want to do, because they got to change. I guess the plumbing is part of the issues. From what I was, it's not winterized. Like they can't have. They want to have all those liquor sales and the beer lines and all that stuff. So they're gonna do that. Hopefully they change some concessions. I don't know if there's really room to add any more seats. I don't really need more than 107,000. So because Michigan's has them beat by a couple thousand, but I think they're gonna continue to to add those kind of things, better concessions. That's what people want. I mean, my next to my section, it's I think a hot dog, those awful nachos that are like in a bag that they put in there with just the cheese and not even like a good pretzel, one of those shitty, you know, soft pretzels they put in the machine. That
super
just
pretzel.
Super pretzel, that's what it is. It's awful.
Easy pretzel.
Yeah, give me like some Annie Ann's and I'm in. I mean, we're Pennsylvania for goddamn.
Show some pride.
It would be interesting to see them try to top the Big House, because the last time the Big House expanded, they dropped the field down, right? Michigan's kind of stuck. I don't see where they could jam more seats in. If you guys were to pass them up, that would be a shot to the ego and in the Big Ten. That'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't think that's in the cards, especially because they've just spent $275,000 on a Sandusky all in costs. Yeah, so
a lot of money.
There's not a lot of money out there. But I think that's fine. I think to continue to improve the current experience would be good. Improve the locker room, because we need. In the end of the day, the stadium's fine because I want kids to come in. So put the money in the facilities for getting these top end 5-star recruits, because that's what they want. Alabama's got like whirlpools and waterfalls and all kind of bullshit facilities. So if you want to compete with them, you're going to have to upgrade your facility. So put the money for the kids.
All right, putting you on the spot. What is Penn State's rank preseason 2017?
Number 4.
Ooh, I like it. Ed, number 5.
I was going with 5 here. Easy's going a notch above, but we're on the same wavelength. I think we're in the neighborhood there. And I'm not a college football guy. I think they have to be in the conversation.
It's going to be Alabama, maybe Clemson. Just because, you know, if they win it, they have to put them up there. USC probably is the number one, and then Penn State. Michigan's losing everybody. Ohio State, I don't, you know, they're always going to be in that up there. But I think they'll be 4 or 5.
Nice. I can't wait to beat a number 4 team in the country in week 2.
If you'd like to put some cash on that, you let me know.
No. I root for Pitt, but I understand what Pitt does. So.
I didn't know St. Vincent had them on the schedule. How did they schedule that?
St. Vincent got a football team after I left. I pretend like it doesn't exist. I think it's stupid.
Is it like a sprint squad, like a 7-on-7, where a guy my size is the center?
No, it's real football. Actually, I went to see a sprint football game up at Mansfield.
You and I have done the same thing. Been there. That's where my significant other went.
That's a fun. It's fun to watch.
Oh, it's great. It's like, I mean, I'm looking at these guys on the offensive line and I go, yeah, I could play guard. Like, fuck it. It's great.
I can't. I wouldn't make the weight limit.
I weigh 100. Yeah. Well, we just hand it off to you every play and you just dominate. No, but like, I'm literally the Jerry Rice of that. I'm just like, holy shit.
Yeah, sprint football's fun. Dave, you ever seen sprint football?
I have not.
Yeah, you got to check it out. It's kind of fun. I watched them play Army. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like club teams too. It's crazy. Yeah. And like the center will be a dude who weighs, I'd say, he's literally my size.
The limit,
150?
I think the limit's 178. I think that's
There you go. Yeah. So it's, and you just hike the ball, you throw it back, and then you're just like, all right, go deep. It's great. It's really, it's like pickup football almost. But people come out for it. It's really cool. But that's where I saw it in Mansfield, and I was like, what is this? That guy is smaller than me. I should be out there.
It's actually 172 pounds is the limit. And the schools that are currently playing are Mansfield, the U.S. Military Academy, so Chestnut Hill College, Cornell, Franklin Pierce, U.S. Naval Academy, University of Pennsylvania, and Post.
Yeah, I got to see, I think, Brown, and it's not even like they're actually, like, they have a sub-football, they're like a club team.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a bunch of guys that got together.
These are
Ultimate Frisbee.
Those are the NCAA-recognized schools. There are other club teams.
Yeah. I didn't know that President Franklin Pierce had a university named after him. I forget the exact thing when I favored it. James K. Polk is the best president we've ever had, so... I love James K. Polk, but they had a saying, you poked me in like 1814, we're going to pierce you in 1822. Like, that was the slogan for him.
Somebody broke out the index cards. What the fuck was that?
I love James K. Polk because he was a one-term president, and that's all he wanted to be. He's like, I'm going to be one term, and that's it. Here's my goals. I'm going to do all this. He accomplished them all, and that was it. And he also had, like, anytime you wanted to talk to him, you could go to the White House and knock on the door. So three in the morning, you knock on the door. He would come down to you and talk about policies. It was just an interesting person that no one really knows about as a president. But he was – I like a guy who's like, here's my goals. I accomplished everything. I'm not running again. Thanks.
I've always been a Taft fan, like a guy who you have to, like, shoehorn into a tub.
He got stuck in a tub. He did.
Wow. You fat-ass bastard.
Huh. We're naming our favorite obscure presidents.
William Henry Henderson. I died in 30 days.
That's a good one.
Simpsons reference.
I feel like I should say Woodrow Wilson because he was the only political scientist to become president, but I did not like the way he ran shit, so not going to do that.
Was it Harding? He gambled away the presidential tea set because he was a drunk and he's drunk all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, presidential drunks. That would be a good podcast. We should do that one.
I think he swam. He did the skinny dip in the Potomac.
You'd have to be drunk to do that.
It was him, or I don't think it was Coolidge. It had to have been him. It was right around that time.
The Potomac is a lot like the Susquehanna. It doesn't move very much, so it's basically like a swamp. I mean, on those really hot days when we haven't had rain in like 3 weeks, the Susquehanna stinks. The Potomac is the same way. You go down to the Potomac.
Doesn't move and stinks. Sounds like a lot of the girls have dated. Oh, hey.
Hey-o.
There's actually a really good podcast. It goes through each president. I think I'm only up to like I'm only a couple in. I like just did Thomas Jefferson, but it's an hour long talking about the entire president.
What is that?
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah,
it's really it's a lady. I think she's from the Washington Post. She's really, really good. She does a lot of research. She interviews like 20 different people in the episode, like historians and all kinds of stuff. It's really, really good.
Oh, nice.
It's well done.
It's legit. I thought it was like a comedy thing. Like
it's presidential from the Washington Post. Yeah, it's really good.
Huh. I really like Hardcore History. He's way too long. like every podcast, like four
way
hours.
Way too long.
But that's good.
There's one. He hasn't done one since August 7th, but it was 275 megs. This is 58.
You listen to Hardcore
301 minutes. I listened to, I think, one total. It was so long. I was like, I can't do this.
It's way too long. So.
Well, I want to say, Ed, what is your, what are you feeling about your Atlanta Falcons' chances to make the Super Bowl? Not win it, to make the Super Bowl.
Make the Super Bowl is going to be tough because, I was rooting for the Giants today because I know they have the number, and that would have been two home games. I do feel that they match up extremely well with the Seahawks, and I think they're going to beat them at home. I would say like a 28-17 type of game. They're not going to like destroy them, but they're going to out. You get the Seahawks behind. They just don't have the offense to come back on you. They just aren't that impressive.
Their offensive line is horrendous. So with the noise and that dome and the speed, they should be able to get to Wilson.
It's definitely going to be a problem. I think the Cowboys are going to beat the Packers. The Packers today, they kind of killed the Giants, but I don't think the game was as out of hand as it looked. The Packers didn't impress me too much. Everyone wants to, slob on Aaron Rodgers' knob, but they don't look like they've caught the heat that they caught in 2012. I do think it will be Falcons at Cowboys, and I think the Cowboys are probably going to control the ball and go to the Super Bowl. I think the Falcons are a year away, and I will say this. I think the Chiefs are going to beat the Steelers next week, and I think it's going to end up Chiefs-Patriots. I don't know what's going to come of that, to be honest with you, so it's going to be probably Cowboys and Chiefs or Patriots is my prediction for the Super Bowl.
I think the Falcons are going to beat the Cowboys, and I think that it's their year to get that run. I don't think they have enough to get over the top to win it, but I think that they'll beat Seattle, no problem. Seattle's got a tough D. They could rush the passer, but you guys are going to be up big, and then Russell Wilson's going to start throwing picks. It's not his year this year. And then the Cowboys, I just don't trust Dak Prescott. I mean, he's been playing great. We'll see what happens when the pressure's on. And I think they'll beat Green Bay just because Green Bay can't run the ball. And then I think the game of the playoffs is going to be next week is Kansas City and Pittsburgh. It's going to be awesome. Ben Roethlisberger's ankle's fine. It's like a little tiny sprain, so he'll be fine.
That should be a fun game. Andy Reid, coaching against Pittsburgh again. I really think it's going to be neat. Man, even in the big win today, I was like, the Dolphins kind of, with Matt Moore, they really kind of hung around on him a little bit. And I'm like, I think the Chiefs might give him a little bit more than they can handle.
And the Dolphins didn't want to be there. You could see in the first half, they did not want to tackle anybody. Man. And they were like literally just sitting. Just standing there. Like, it's not even flag football. You just stood there.
And by the second quarter, they were on South Beach. They're like, fuck this. They were done.
But yeah, to be fair, if you've ever been to South Beach, I probably wouldn't want to be there either. So
I have not, but I understand the concept.
I do think that game said more about Miami than it said about Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh won the game. They played well. I thought the defense was better than the offense. And I agree with you that the Kansas City Pittsburgh game, it should be really great. I hope it'll be really great. I also hope that the Steelers win, but I don't feel great about it. And Ben's a little bit banged up with an ankle, but Ben is literally always banged up. I do think that Ben sees his window closing, and Bill Cowher said he had talked to Ben at some point, and he thought that Roethlisberger was aware and acknowledged and knew that he wasn't going to get many more chances of this, almost like this may be his last best chance. Ugh. I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of those guys. I think Matt Ryan, and I know that Ed thinks they're a year away. Who knows? If they lose Shanahan, who knows what that offense is going to look like next year? This might be his window. Brady, he's just at the age where he just doesn't have that many seasons left. So, I mean, they all have that. I don't think that it's his last chance. So, I think that Kansas City can rush the passer with 3 and 4 guys, and they can get pressure, which is devastating to the Patriots because that's the formula to beat them.
And their safeties are very good.
Have great safeties. Get 4 guys that can rush the passer. And just try to cover everybody else to do your best. No Gronk to get those safeties out of the way. So now Kansas City is dangerous versus New England if Travis Kelce is going to have a great day. But Pittsburgh is dangerous too because they could score with anybody. But I don't think their defense is as great. I mean, Miami almost came down and scored with 30 seconds left. I don't know how the hell their left tackle didn't block James Harrison right before them. But they almost put up 20 points right there at halftime. They had a chance. So we'll see. I don't know if Kansas City, if they could do that to Kansas City's defense or their offense. I don't think they could score 35 points on Kansas City.
Did you see Bud Dupree vaporize Matt Moore today?
Oh, I love it. That penalty is less than when you push a guy 30 yards down the field. You hold his arm. That's a 30-yard penalty. But you literally try to kill a guy, put a helmet to his face, and you get a 15-yard penalty. That's it.
Yeah, I that was. And there were a lot of people on Twitter, and for a while there, I was kind of like going back and forth till I watched it enough times where I was like, well, maybe that wasn't a penalty. The football's still in the frame. And I'm like, no, Bud Dupree was just trying to hurt a guy.
And he went out to destroy him, and that was what got him the flag.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was the right call. What I found disturbing was Matt Moore was only on the bench for one play.
He didn't get hit in the head. He got hit in the ribs. So they're probably like,
"How?" He got hit in the jaw.
It looked like okay.
The crown of the helmet hit him in the jaw.
Oh, he hit him right in the jaw. Yeah.
Seriously, I think they're just like, "Hey, we're going to ask you how many fingers we're holding up." It's the answer's always two. Just always answer two. He's like, okay.
He was on the ground longer than he was on the bench.
It looked really bad. Like I thought he had broken ribs.
When I saw the hit, I thought, well, that's like one of those career altering hits where you're just not maybe the same afterwards. That was crazy. There was another crackback block by number 17 is my recollection. One of the
Rogers.
Yeah. That I looked at it, and I went, well, that was like a Heinz Ward block if I ever saw one. And now they're calling those. The league's definitely different now.
When you go back and watch it in slow motion, the guy did turn and see him, but that was kind of one of those ugh blocks. He went out to kill that guy. And Heinz Ward, I will to this day, and everyone's like, he just made an aggressive play. He went out to like hurt a dude.
Heinz Ward was a dirty play. He would always go helmet to helmet on the, especially against the Bengals, man. He would always just, I'm trying to give you a concussion. And use my helmet as a weapon. Not hit you hard. Use my helmet as a weapon. That's different.
And to this day, I will always say that Warren Sapp on Chad Clifton was a dirty hit. I don't give a shit when it was legal in the play. No, that was unnecessary. All he had to do was give him a forearm shiver and get him out of the play. And he destroyed him on purpose. That was bullshit. I don't care what's going on.
You're not a tough guy hitting a guy who's not looking at you. I mean, it's like walking up and punching Mike Tyson in the face and knocking him out. Yeah, I knocked him out. I was like, yeah, he wasn't looking at me. I was like, if he looked at me, he would murder me.
We have a term for that. It's called a sucker punch.
Yeah, that's basically what these hits were. And that's what these guys, I'm glad they get that out of the league.
And you should. Now, the guy today, you could kind of argue he was looking at him, and it wasn't completely out of bounds. But, that game looked like it was about to turn into a goddamn street fight at one point. I was like, Ndamukong Suh is just going to start cleating people in the face.
I was waiting for Suh to do something.
He did nothing.
That's because LeGarrette Blount took his heart last week in the locker room. Like, even his guys in the team don't like him. He's like, he sucks. Screw that guy. He's dirty. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
I love LG. He's asshole. Yeah, LeGarrette's good. And just to let you know, and the reason I think the Steelers are going to lose this game on Sunday is Kansas City got their asses kicked against Pittsburgh in week 3 or 4, whatever that was.
I think it was week 2.
That always comes back. That revenge is there. When there's an ass whooping, I never want to play a team that I kicked their ass earlier in the year because they're coming at you with everything they got. They're putting extra reps
in Kansas City.
In Kansas City, that place is the loudest stadium in the NFL. I guess officially they broke the record. That place is, and they haven't had, when's the last time they had a meaningful playoff game? I mean, I know they played the Patriots last year. No, they weren't winning the Super Bowl last year. They got a legit chance to win. So that place is going to be bananas.
Yeah, I don't feel good about it. All right. Well, hey, good episode.
Great way to end.
Well, all right. Steelers suck. See you next week.
Yeah, I'm going to hit stop.